They walk over to the balcony and survey the dance floor below. What was that about sleepovers? Oh, the blizzard. They can get here, but most of them won't be able to get home. This happens a couple of times a year. I think they look forward to it. That's why the place is so crowded. It's the big sleepover at Moroon. They know we bring out the cots and blankets and give them breakfast in the morning. It's how they spend the big snowstorms. Sometimes I think I'm running a freaking homeless shelter. Some of them drive halfway across Nebraska when they hear there's a blizzard coming. The freight elevator is in the southwest corner of the building. On the fifth and top floor, where it stopped, two long dark corridors lead off at right angles. A 4-foot-high brick-walled balcony runs around the entire floor and overlooks the central dance floor far below. Along the corridors are a few dark solid doors. The floor and walls are polished brick. Dim spotlights recessed into the ceiling every 10 feet or so shine soft yellow circles on the red brick floor. Mike looks down on the dancing throng. The music at this height resounds in the echoes of the cavernous vault below. In the dancing colored lights, the floating metallic plastic petals swarm and unseen drafts of air. He's momentarily spellbound by the scene of light and motion beneath. Over here, to the right, there's my apartment, interrupts David. They walk about halfway down the corridor to the east until they come to an otherwise unmarked, solid, unlocked door, which he pushes open and gestures for Mike to enter. Mike stands at one end of an enormous, dimly lit apartment, eerily quiet given the ruckus below. It's a loft with a floor of polished stone and walls of uneven old red brick. Aged, polished wood beams above conceal low-wattage indirect lighting aimed upwards onto the ancient dark wooden angled roof above. The trussed rafters are 2 feet thick, fastened together with 100-year-old decorative wrought iron bars and braced with 2-inch thick steel rods joined in heavy steel turnbuckles. To his left is a raised kitchen area with all stainless steel appliances and cabinets. To his right is a dark sitting area with 3 long, low white leather and chrome couches arranged in a U-shape facing the southern wall. In the center of the couches is a great, dark, polished, inlaid wooden table. Against the southern brick wall is a flat HDTV, fully 8 feet wide and 4.5 feet high. Below the screen sits a long, low, glass-doored cabinet full of electronic equipment with many red, yellow, blue, and green LEDs strobing silently to unseen signals. The silent screen displays several windows with scrolling news feeds and others with maps and some with security cam shots of the club below. Further down to the west, the room is dark. A 10-foot stretch of wall is covered from floor to ceiling with dark drapes. Beyond the living room, a hallway recedes into darkness. David flips a hidden switch. To the low hum of an unseen motor, the drapes begin to part, revealing a panoramic window across half the far end of the wall. From the roof, floodlights shine on the street below. In the gathering storm, billows of snow swirl in tiny cyclones as the wind rolls off the roof above. A few lights are faintly visible from the nearby interstate, mainly the yellow strobe lights of highway crews making futile efforts to keep the drifts at bay. So, what the hell's up? Who wants you dead? Well, at the moment, one person in particular, the main drug lord for this part of the country. Seems he doesn't like me anymore. Anymore? He used to like you? Says David, his eyes open, saucer wide. Yeah, I was his best boy. Then you do drugs? Says David as he glances quickly at a small green LED under a tiny lens just above the big screen. No, I spy on drug dealers and expose them. I'm a reporter now. Geez, you had us, me worried. Yeah, well, it worries me too. I've been working undercover for a news network. And I suppose this makes the drug people unhappy? Very unhappy. I got a bullet-pocked car down the street to prove it. Nice. But it'll be a bitch to explain to the insurance company. It's not insured. So this explains your snowy trek to Omaha. Yep, so it does. Moment later, there's a knock on the door. David shouts, come on in. It's open. Todd the geek in the black t-shirt comes in with 2 pizzas, trays, and a couple of napkins and knives and forks and says, here you go. Thought I'd bring it up myself. He places them in the middle of the coffee table. So, curious, are we? Says David sarcastically. Who, me? Just being social, answers Todd. Or get tired of watching on the webcam. That too. Mike gets up and shakes hand with Todd and says, my name's Mike McAnaeus. I'm an old friend of David's, so to speak. Nice to meet you. I feel like we've already met. Actually, in fact, I already do know you. We scanned your driver's license at the door, and I've already done a cross-check on you with the Iowa DMV, downloaded your college transcript, and hacked your email account. Nice GREs, by the way. You should have gone to grad school. Oh, one more thing. They overcharged you at that motel down the street. How'd you know about that motel? Says Mike. The motel? I hacked your credit card records, and your bank account, too, for that matter. Still working on that DNA sample we collected off the drink glass, but we did get a good set of fingerprints. Jeez, I see what you mean about being watched. Right, says David. Sitting down and pulling a slice of pizza, Mike says, who's Mary? Todd says, Mary is David's little bundle of joy and master of discipline. Keep it up and I'll tell her what you said. Ah, so, okay, I'm ready. Start talking. What were you saying about drug lords? Just as Mike begins to speak, the door swings open and in walks Mary Murphy. That's Mary, whispers Todd. Don't piss her off. Quiet! Quiet, you. I already heard the master of discipline remark. You're on thin ice, she commands as she strides into the kitchen, opens a cabinet, surveys the contents, then reaches up and pulls down a $100 bottle of Merlot. Grabbing a crystal wine glass and a bottle opener, she saunters into the living room area. She says, don't mind me, boys. Reception was bad. Todd, let's replace some batteries, okay? I could barely make out what you people were saying. She sits on the couch next to him. In a slight brogue, she announces, I'm Mary Murphy, as you no doubt know. Happy to meet you, replies Mike as he leans over and shakes her hand. Okay, the formalities are over. You can start talking now. I'm ready. Don't mind her. She'll lose interest in a minute and go chat up some shopping channel, says David. And you, hush up if you know what's good for you, she pronounces imperiously. Actually, maybe we should put this on a podcast. Where the hell is Lance, says David. He's working out the security for the pajama party downstairs, says Mary. Well, he'll just have to watch the replay. All right, already. Begin, says David. Am I being recorded? Yes. You people really do worry me. And rightly so. Now start. After college, I got admitted to a few graduate journalism programs, but didn't have the money to go. So I moved to just outside Des Moines and got a job at a gas station and a convenience store. Not really my dream position, but it paid the rent on an old farmhouse that I called home. I thought I might be able to write freelance or something. I sent out a lot of manuscripts. Got a lot of rejection letters back, too. There I was, 26, and going nowhere. Until one weekend, I got the idea of going down to Des Moines and blowing my savings, about $30, on some bars. My big night in the city. So into Des Moines I go with my old car for a night of serious bar hopping, up to a $30 limit. That was where my problems began, more or less. You see, there was this news crew in town from one of the cable news networks, ANN, to cover the run-up to the Iowa caucuses. I got talking to one of their producers, a guy named Jim Monroe. He remembered a piece I'd sent them earlier in the year. He said he liked it a lot, but they couldn't buy it due to budget limits. Then he said he had something, though, if I wanted it, but it was potentially dangerous. I said that pumping gas in a small town in Iowa was dangerous, too, to your career. He laughed and told me what he was up to. It seemed they wanted to do an undercover investigative report on drug dealing nationwide, and, in particular, in St. Louis, a kingpin in the Midwest drug trade, smuggling, distribution, the whole thing. They especially wanted a segment on methamphetamine production and traffic in the U.S., with a concentration on the meth labs in rural America. Meth certainly had been a problem in Iowa. He said he wanted me to try to infiltrate the St. Louis-based organization, since I looked the small-town Iowa guy part, streetwise, that is. I wasn't sure I appreciated that part. Anyway, I agreed and met him again secretly for the next week as he filled me in on what they had so far. So, long story short, I made some contacts. One thing led to another, and soon I found myself very much on the inside and feeding stories and details to Joe at ANN. But it wasn't long before I was working closely with the boss of the whole show for Iowa, Missouri, and Nebraska. Once on the inside, I and my computer geek girlfriend systematically infiltrated all levels of the Midwest cartel. For the past year, we've collected data on every facet of their production, distribution, and money laundering. So what happened? How did the early retirement program cut in, says David. Well, see, a few days ago my cover got blown. They found out about my connection with ANN. Bottom line, however, I do have my laptop and some other secure copies. Why don't you just dump what you have to the police, asks Todd. Well, a couple of reasons, actually. First, I work for ANN, and my obligation is to see they get the story. Kind of a professional thing. Secondly, I want credit for this. It's been a lot of risky work, and I'd kind of like to see my byline on the result. And anyway, the police have their own issues. There's a lot of mob protection money out there. There's no guarantee there'd be any action as a result, and it might give the bad guys time to cover their tracks. Then why don't you just let ANN have a copy of your data? Then you won't be as much of a target, says Todd. I don't want to contact ANN right now because I don't know who might read my stuff there. You know what I mean? It's too risky. There's at least one mole there. Who knows how many? If they get hold of my raw files, there are people who might pay a price because they talked to me, like that guy in St. Louis who gave me the tip that they were on to me. If I tell ANN where I am or what I've got, that might tip off the mob and let them start covering their trail, too. You see, this is just the first in a series, and I don't want them to know what might come in the next installment. No, I just need a little time to get the data organized, then begin the release in a way that'll do the most damage. So after my events today, I figured it was time to visit Omaha, one of the few people this side of the Mississippi I could trust. I got here a few hours ago, just as the snow was beginning to come down heavy. I sort of figured, seeing as I'm temporarily without accommodations, I'd ask if you'd help me find a place to hide out for a while until I can sort things out a bit. But if you can't, I understand. Seems I'm a bit of a hot commodity at the moment. But no problem. You can stay right here. I got plenty of room, says David. You sure? Yeah, it's no problem. One tiny detail. My girlfriend, who was working with me on all this, she is, or was, in Columbia, Missouri, attending some computer conference. She did all the computer work for me. We were living together at that farmhouse. Where is she now? Asked David. I'm not sure. After the train wreck, I called her and told her what happened. I was going to drive down there and pick her up, but she insisted on coming here instead. She said she'd get here on her own. So basically, I have no idea where she is. Can't you phone her? Not really. She made me shut down my phone. She said she'd do the same with hers. I guess she's on the road. When do you expect her here? She said tomorrow night, late. She said she'd meet me here. Okay, we'll have the people downstairs keep a lookout for her. Her name's Jessica Gannon. Here, I've got a picture of her. As he pulls out his wallet and hands David a small snapshot. Wait a sec, I'll scan it, says David as he goes over to a scanner on top of the cabinet beneath the large screen. Todd, see if everybody gets a copy of this. You bet. Tell me, where's your laptop now? Asked Todd, changing the topic. I locked it in the trunk of my car, which is buried under a snowdrift by now, I expect, says Mike. I can get it in the morning. I think it's safe right now. So does anyone at ANN know you're in Omaha? Asks Todd. I called Joe Monroe on my way over here from a payphone to tell him my cover had been blown and that I was an inside job, but I didn't say where I was going. I told him I was heading west at the time and to keep quiet. I said I'd contact him when I felt it was safe to do so. On your way over here, did you use any credit cards besides the motel? Asks Todd. Yeah, sure. I didn't have much cash. Did you make any cell phone calls? Yeah, as I was leaving Des Moines, like I said, I called Jessica. Why? Those things can be traced, said David. Uh-oh. But she told me to shut the phone down, and I did. She said that would help. Yeah, good. Keep it off. Let's hope they haven't hacked your bank account like I have. It's probably not a good idea for you to be out in the streets just in case. Todd will have some of the guys go over to the motel in the morning and check you out, get your stuff, and bring your car here. I didn't think about the credit cards. How much do you think your drug lord friend knows? Does he know how much you've got? Says David. Well, I don't know, of course, but I'll bet they're thinking real careful-like right now about what work I did and for whom. Question is, who else knows? Just your bosses in St. Louis or others? Says David. Hard to tell, really. Because if it's just the St. Louis operation, there'll be just one desperate drug lord after you. Todd, you start sniffing around and see if there's any signs that they've traced Mike here. I'll be back in a minute. You got it. Mike, you got your cell phone with you? Says Todd. Yeah, why? Do you use it to call people in a drug organization? Yeah, sure. Let me dump its memory, then you can tell me which numbers are drug-related. Then I can tower track the ones that are cell phones and see if they're headed this way. Sure, here it is, says Mike as he reaches in his pocket and pulls out his phone. David says to Mike, you ready?